From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be, across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast AM. Next hour, demonologist Chris Doyle joins us. Possessions. You know, he had to cancel last week. The demons attacked him, but he's back. Tomorrow, by the way, I want you to circle your calendar. First hour, former Arizona Governor Fife Symington will be our guest to talk about the Phoenix Lights, the UFO that he now admits he saw. Well, here's some of the news of the day. If you went shopping at TJ Maxx over the past, many years, your credit card could be in danger. More than 2 months after first disclosing that hackers assessed customers' financial data from its computers, discount retailer TJ Maxx Company has revealed that the information from at least 45.7 million credit and debit cards was stolen over an 18-month period. In a regulatory filing that gives the first detailed account of the breach initially disclosed in January, the owner of TJ Maxx and Marshalls and other stores in North America said the United Kingdom as well, also said that another 455,000 customers who returned merchandise without receipts had their personal data stolen, including driver's license numbers. So just make sure you check your credit card statements and your debit card statements. Who knows what's going on? Britain took its case to free its 15 sailors and Marines held by Iran to the United Nations, asking the Security Council to support a statement that would deplore Tehran's action and demand their immediate release. But the Security Council diplomats said the press statement circulated by Britain's UN mission is likely to face problems from Russia and others because it says the Brits were operating in Iraqi waters, a point that Iran contests. Police in New York were trying to determine whether a leg that washed up behind the Gold Coast, New York mansion of Cablevision CEO James Dolan is connected to a torso found earlier this month. A landscaper discovered the human leg just after 8 a.m. near the Cove Neck House on the Long Island Sound. Earlier in March, a beachcomber found a dismembered torso in a suitcase at Harbor Island Park in suburban New York City. Now, if you're ever going to make fun of the King of Thailand, you better be ready for the punishment. A Swiss man has been jailed for 10 years for insulting Thailand's king by vandalizing his portraits during a drunken spree. The 57-year-old man, his name is Oliver Jufer, has pleaded guilty to 5 counts of the crime of offending the dignity of a sovereign for defacing several portraits of the king with spray paint. He had faced up to 75 years in prison, but the court sentenced him to 20 years and then halved the term because he had confessed. I wonder if we had that kind of punishment here, what that would do to graffiti on all the freeways and things like that. The dual suns that rise and set over Luke Skywalker's homeworld in the film Star Wars. Remember that scene? Gorgeous. Well, it may be more than just fantasy, according to data from NASA. NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope has found planetary systems are at least as abundant around dual stars as they are around single stars like our very own sun. Story we've been following all week, something downright weird has been sighted twirling over the North Pole of Saturn, a long-lived double hexagon formed in the clouds. Of course, Richard C. Hoagland knew about this a long time ago. He's our guest this hour on Coast to Coast AM. Richard C. Hoagland is a former Space Science Museum curator, former NASA consultant during the historic Apollo missions to the moon. He's a science advisor to Walter Cronkite and CBS News for more than 20-plus years now. Richard has been leading an outside scientific team and a critically acclaimed independent analysis of possibly intelligently designed artifacts on Mars and also the moon. Richard and his team investigations have been extended to include over 30 years of previously hidden data from NASA, Soviet, and Pentagon missions to the moon as well. You know, earlier this week we had Sean David Morton on because he was right about the Japanese earthquake prediction. Richard C. Hoagland talked about the hexagon 10 years ago, maybe 15, Richard, wasn't it?
Do I get the second hour?
You not yet, but you'll get back.
it was 15. 15 years ago, I had the privilege of standing in the Dag Hammarskjöld Auditorium, which, by the way, has 195 seats, which I thought was kind of interesting, And I had to do two back-to-back presentations because there was not enough room. And we had to do 7 hours total, which we taped. And, in fact, that old tape is available as a DVD from the Enterprise Mission. If you go to our Enterprise Mission website, the link is at the top. And I'll give out an 800 number in a little while if George lets me.
Yes, he will.
Okay. But the most remarkable thing is that this was taken, this image of this extraordinary geometric figure has been known since 1980, since the first Voyager flyby. What was astonishing to everyone then, and what is astonishing to me now, is that it's still there. This is what all the excitement is about, because the new Cassini mission, which is this incredible Greyhound bus-sized spacecraft that has Saturn now orbiting, not flying past, but orbiting, took some really amazing 12 days of infrared photography, far infrared, which is the heat radiation coming up from the interior of Saturn, over a 12-day period, and they made this movie, which is going to be on the extensive, article that I'm working on right now for the Enterprise Mission website, which is not quite ready because, George, you kind of, got to me a little sooner than I thought you were going to.
I couldn't wait. You know, I told you earlier when this thing broke and you and I started conversing, I was going to look for the hole to get you in fast.
So we have a hole on Thursday night, okay?
So we have the hole.
Anyway, by tomorrow I'll have this probably posted, and there's some amazing photography, synoptic, different wavelengths, different levels. This thing, George, is kind of like the Rosetta Stone. It's the key to so much of what I've been discussing with you and Art going back, before I did the UN, about hyperdimensional physics and how the solar system really works. And I'm really kind of amused to see the NASA people saying things like, well, we can't understand it.
Yeah, it's perplexing. Baffling. It's bizarre, they say. But I've got to ask you, Richard, what the heck is it?
Well, first of all, the clouds we're looking at are not solid features. Saturn is one of the gas giants, so there's no solid surface. You're not looking at mountains or valleys or whatever. You're looking at an incredibly big, dense, fluffy atmosphere. And this set of hexagonal lines, six sides, perfectly straight, centered on the pole with an interior hexagon inside the outer one, is about 25,000 kilometers across. You could put four Earths side by side across this thing and just touch each edge, each side. And it's made of clouds. It's made of ammonia clouds. And what's really cool is to see in some of the infrared shots that just as we saw in 1980 with the Voyager visible light imagery, we're seeing that the clouds are racing backward, George, along the edges of this hexagon at over 300 miles an hour, and they're making the turns, the 60-degree turns at each of the corners. I mean, this is just so phenomenal for a fluffy, insubstantial atmosphere of gases and clouds. I mean, no one can imagine, certainly not at NASA, how this thing works. Well, I did at the UN 15 years ago, and I stood up there and I laid it out. It's all about hyperdimensional physics.
I mean, it is absolutely mind-boggling to think that a cloud pattern on top of a pole of a planet could have that kind of shape to it and stay there for so long.
Well, that's the really cool part. Nobody except us apparently expected this thing would persist. I mean, when we first saw it, I realized that it was another part of the puzzle, the connecting the dots with the whole hyperdimensional model, which predicts very nicely why you have huge cyclonic features near the equator of these planets at 19.5 degrees, why you have volcanoes with lava coming up from the outer core of the Earth on Earth at 19.5, which is the big Hawaiian volcano, why you have the largest volcano in the solar system, ancient and fossilized, and a huge pile of rock on Mars at 19.5, because rotating planets are literally able to create force structures inside. These are standing wave patterns, which allow for energy to come up at these preferred points. Mm-hmm. And one of the signatures is 19.5. The other, if you have the right dye in the stream so you can see it, like the atmospheric ammonia in Saturn's atmosphere is this incredible hexagonal feature precisely located around the north rotational pole of the planet Saturn.
Will it ever dissipate, Richard?
No, no. It is permanent. As long as Saturn exists, this will be there. So it's going to be there for a lot of study during the Cassini mission, and I imagine during the extended mission, they will crank the orbit up again into this quasi-polar orbit, which is at a very high latitude looking down on the North Hemisphere, which, by the way, you can't see the Northern Hemisphere right now because it's in darkness. Saturn is tipped about like the Earth. It's tipped about 25 degrees to its orbit. We're tipped 23 and a half. And so the Northern Hemisphere of Saturn, particularly the poles, is in winter right now. It's not going to get sunlight for another couple of years, so they can only look at this thing and monitor it with the infrared, and the infrared is penetrating deep in the atmosphere, although on a planet which is 60-some thousand miles across, you know, 50, 60 miles is not very deep, but it's deep enough for them to see, again, they're not expecting this, that this thing has multiple layers, that the hexagons go down, kind of like one of those nested Chinese puzzle boxes.
Yes, exactly.
And it goes down in toward the core of the planet, which, of course, is intrinsic to our model, because all of this geometry, all of these standing waves, all of this patterning is due to the energy coming up from the center of Saturn, which is, in fact, coming in from another dimension in our model.
If you were on Saturn in the middle of this hexagon, would you be able to see walls of clouds and you'd be trapped in the inside of this huge hexagon?
If you were near one of the edges, but, I mean, remember, this thing is four Earths across, so you're not going to see the other edge, and it would be beyond the curvature of Saturn. So you might see this huge linear wall, almost like a front, like a weather front. Sometimes you can see, particularly when I was on the East Coast, we used to have these walls of clouds coming in with thunderstorms and multiple levels of clouds when a front came through. You would see some of that, but the coolest thing is the fact that these clouds are racing backward around the edges of this hexagon, and they're making the turns. It's like a huge racetrack, a hexagonal racetrack on Saturn.
When I first saw the picture, I thought, my gosh, we found the monolith from Space Odyssey.
Well, I've had a number of emails from people saying, Dick, is this artificial? And I have to gently remind them that, no, this kind of geometry is also natural if it's positioned, you know, at those key latitudes, 19.5 or, you know, at the 78 degree latitude around the pole. But it's all part of this physics, which is what's really running the whole solar system. I mean, this is the key to understanding global warming on Earth, which I think we're working on getting a panel set up to talk about at some length later on in the month. It's also the key to understanding why the rest of the planets are warming up. I mean, we've got warming activity going on from Venus to Mars to Jupiter to Saturn to Uranus, Neptune. Even Pluto is getting warmer, and you certainly can't blame that on SUVs. So this is, if physicists and NASA scientists are open, this in these images, in this incredible detailed analysis now that the Cassini spacecraft has made possible, is literally the keys to understanding how solar systems really work.
Why don't other planets have this similar hexagon shape
at
its pole?
Actually, they do.
They do?
Yes. NASA's just not kind of talking about it a lot because they're embarrassed. You know, in the article that I'm writing, I'm going to show examples on Jupiter, also made by the Cassini mission when it flew past on its way to Saturn, of this similar hexagonal feature around the north pole of Jupiter. You haven't heard about that, have you?
No, I have not. Now, what's the significance of this shape on the pole as opposed to someplace else on the planet?
Well, because if you understand the 3D tetrahedral geometry I've been talking about.
I flunked geometry, Richard.
Uh-oh. Hexagon is a two-dimensional projection of two interlocking 3D tetrahedrons, one inside each other. Think of it as a kind of a 3D version of the Israeli flag or the Jewish star.
Okay.
And the reason it's around the pole is because this is all connected to rotation, rotation, rotation. When you take mass in our three dimensions and you spin it, You create forces that are non-Newtonian, that are not modeled in normal laboratory data. However, I've got an incredible new piece of information, which will also be in the article. There is in Nature, which is the most prestigious scientific journal in the world. You would agree with that, right?
Yes, sir.
Last year, there was a paper published from, I believe it was a university either in Northern England or in Scotland. The actual references will be in the paper. But what these guys did was they basically spun water in a bucket with some holes in it. And they found if they spun the water fast enough, like almost 1,000 RPM,
mm-hmm.
you know, hundreds of times per second, that they would get bizarre geometric shapes. And the shapes walked up the 2D projections of the platonic solids from the equilateral triangle all the way to the hexagon, depending upon the rate of rotation.
And the shapes would stay
as long as it's rotating. So you've got mass spinning, and what this tells us is there are other forces in heaven and earth ratio than you have dreamed of, and they have to do with how energy enters a spinning system by means of another dimension. Now, the Russians have done a lot of laboratory work, but I'm going to put some references in this new paper too, on what's called torsion field physics. Torsion is basically rotation, right? Torque, torsion, spin.
Mm-hmm.
They've done a lot of work going back to the 1930s, which I got access to a couple of years ago. I mean, it was like having a $10 million grant. Since nobody has dropped 10 million bucks on us lately, that was kind of nice to have.
Or even one, yes.
It was this extraordinary catalog of papers, real science papers, showing all kinds of phenomena that we had only thought about or projected that someone had actually found in laboratory data, which we have now been using to confirm all kinds of aspects of the HD model. Well, what's interesting is that the NASA guys who are commenting on the hexagon around Saturn don't seem to either know about the English paper in Nature related to spinning, you know, water buckets, or the Russian torsion work. It really is weird that in the era of the Internet and incredible international relations in science, that our guys at NASA seem to be not really plugged in some levels. And this, of course, is why this show is so important, because you know they all listen when I come on, George.
All the time.
So they're all running to their computers.
They monitor you, Richard.
They're all running their computers, and they're going to look up torsion physics and rotation and Nature, and they'll find these papers, and in that incredible database is the answer to why Saturn is showing this incredible hyperdimensional geometry.
If William Reich, who believed in orgon energy, if Nikola Tesla, who believed in free energy in the universe, if your friend Dr. Gene Malov were alive today looking for zero-point energy, what would they have been saying about this today, this hexagon on Saturn?
Well, with a little nudging, I think they'd all agree that this is an incredible key. I mean, if you look at the other pole of Saturn, it isn't at the other pole. Remember, a few months ago, they published some Cassini images of this southern view, the close-up southern view.
Right, right.
And it was this huge hurricane-like vortex with huge eye walls and clouds
mm-hmm.
extending
Massive.
Hundreds of miles up and down. But it didn't have geometry. It looked like a huge, in fact, it almost looked like the Egyptian eye of the god Horus, because it's kind of elliptical. It isn't really round. At the southern end of the planet, you've got that feature. At the northern end, you've got this hexagon. Well, right away, anybody is going to say, wait a minute, the two hemispheres should be hemispherically symmetric. What goes on in the southern hemisphere and Vegas stays there, and what goes on in the northern hemisphere should be a mirror image. I mean, that's what we thought about planets all these years. George, it turns out that is not correct. And in the Russian data, going back to a brilliant Russian scientist, oh, I wish he was still alive. I would so have loved to have met this guy, Nicholas Kozarev. He would have been an incredible interview for you. He was such a visionary, such a genius. Stalin, of course, you know, put all his geniuses in the gulag. So this guy spent 30 years in the gulag figuring this stuff out. And when he finally got let out, He went back to the Observatory of Pulkovo, wrote a series of incredible papers that are now available on the web in English, some of them, and he predicted that you would find, because of this torsion physics, hemispherical asymmetries on Earth between the northern and the southern hemisphere, and they're there.
You've got quite an analytical mind yourself, Richard. We'll be back with Richard C. Hoagland. We'll open up the phone lines, and we'll continue chatting with him about what he talked about 15 years ago. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. You know, I'm proud that we have Richard C. Hoagland associated with us here on Coast to Coast AM. I really am. He's quite a guy. We'll be back with him and your phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Going to give you a toll-free phone number now for Richard Hoagland's historic UN briefing. This phone number is available right now to you, so you can call. Operators are there right now. This is something that you can just keep as a collector's item. It's 1-877, one of those toll-free numbers with the 877-345-6222. That's 877-345-6222. How long is the whole presentation, Richard?
Well, it's actually packaged in with all the other material I've done on Mars and the moon.
Oh, great. Okay, super.
So they actually get four DVDs for the whole thing, or six, or I forget how many are in the whole set. But it's basically the chronology of all our research going back almost 30 years with the background of the geometry we found at Cydonia, how it fits together into the model of the physics, examples I gave at the UN of what this could do for the world community. I mean, George, we're talking here about the keys to the kingdom. We're talking here about the secret of free energy, that incredibly elusive goal that so many in the, you know, cutting-edge community talk about and so many in the mainstream poo-poo. Well, when you see examples in the solar system, as I laid out at the UN, we've got planets out there, Jupiter and Saturn in particular, that are emitting like 3 to 2 times more energy into space than they're getting from the sun. So you got to ask yourself, where's the energy coming from? And there's no mainstream model, no mainstream theory, despite all their arm waving, which can explain tonight why Jupiter and Saturn are emitting about twice as much energy into space as they can be getting at their respective distances from the sun.
I bet when you spoke 15 years ago at the UN, you probably went through 3 Secretary Generals. Now, to people who don't know Richard, when he puts on a presentation, he puts on a presentation. Don't expect to get in and get out in an hour. It's not going to happen.
And the DVDs are not an hour. These are very careful, very detailed, very illustrated. I had a lot of very important help. You know, we actually had an art exhibit that I was able to put up in the lobby area of the United Nations, which was there for weeks, which is on the DVD series. You actually see that. And, I mean, it was so interesting because I almost didn't get a chance to do this presentation. I had had lunch with one of Boutros Ghali's. Boutros Ghali was the UN secretary at the time, and I had the pleasure of having lunch with one of his key aides, and I tendered an invitation to the Secretary General to come to the presentation. Well, it turns out that week had to be in Africa, but he sent me a beautiful letter, you know, expressing his wishes for my success and wanting to see a tape of the presentation when it was done. And the morning that I was going to present, somebody from CNN called the United Nations and told the security people, this is before anything about terrorism or all that, but they just told the security people that there was some wacko from Mars claiming to be from Mars and was going to be speaking there, and did the security people know this was going on? So a few moments before I'm supposed to go on stage, I am literally confronted by about half a dozen very burly security guys.
They rushed you?
Oh, yeah. And they were going to throw me out. I was not going to be able to go on. There was an auditorium full of delegates and staff and news people and the public. They weren't going to let me go on because I was a man from Mars, some kind of a wacko. I had the forethought, George, of having the letter from Boutros Ghali in my coat pocket. So I took it out and I held it up, kind of like you hold up a cross to a vampire.
Right.
And they saw that it was from him and his signature, and it was the funniest thing. They literally all fell back, George. That it was kind of like the Red Sea parted, and I walked through them to the auditorium on stage and said, "Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is," and I started my presentation.
And there it went. Wow.
So I came within a whisker. Now, that's because the other side, the dark side, George, does not want this information out. And I am not paranoid when I tell you there have been umpteen examples over the years, the almost 30 years now I've been doing this, of things that have happened, events that have happened, efforts to keep us down on the farm, to keep this suppressed. So, frankly, I had come prepared, and it was a good thing I had that letter, because if I didn't, you wouldn't get to see what I presented at the UN on this DVD.
I think, in retrospect, now that I look back at something, I think they sent someone to me to try to convince me not to keep you on the program about a year ago. Yes.
Really?
Now let everything that you say now just hits home. And I told this individual, no, that's never going to happen. And the person kind of walked away as if he did not complete his mission. Very interesting. I'll talk to you about that later.
Okay.
All right.
I'm not surprised. And obviously for our friends in the audience, all this should do is to reinforce the idea that maybe we're onto something. Because if we were just a wacko, we were just nuts, George, why would they care?
Well, Richard, look, years ago you talk about water on Mars. Everyone laughs at you. Now there's water on Mars. I mean, it's just countless things that you have said over the years on this program, on your website, theenterprisemission.com, where science has laughed at you and ridiculed you, and you have always been vindicated. Now, I just can't wait until we get to Mars, because to me, that's the holy grail of everything you've been doing.
Well, one of the things we've got to do as part of our long-range plan, you and I specifically, can I tell you this privately with nobody else listening in?
You sound like UFO Phil now.
Or who was the Connie Chung? Remember Connie Chung and her famous, just tell me?
Yeah.
You and I need to plan now, seriously, this MRO campaign with this special audience. Because unless we demand, in the elegant way that this audience can demand of NASA headquarters and Mike Griffin and the White House, close-up imagery with that spacecraft orbiting Mars tonight, which can take things with a resolution of inches as opposed to tens of feet for a previous mission, we are not going to get to know in our lifetime, I don't think, George, whether what we know is what I know is that Cydonia and other places on Mars is really there. It's going to take that exquisite close-up imagery that only this audience can basically politically get. And now is the time to do it. So you and I need to strategize behind the scenes when we do that show, who else we have on it, what kind of evidence we lay out, and how we basically present a campaign to the American people to get the images that they are paying for and deserve.
And let's get some national coverage right before the show hits our airwaves so we can get some people to get ready for it.
Okay.
We can do that. Let's go east of the Rockies. We'll finish up with phone calls for the rest of this hour with Richard C. Hoagland. East of the Rockies, you're up with us. Hi there.
Hello, me?
Yeah, it is all you, sir.
Hi, George. Hi, Richard.
Hi there.
This is Adam calling from Pennsylvania. George had a guy on the other night, one of the guests, was talking about ancient civilizations here that have come and gone. And I was wondering, what do you think about the fact that maybe, you know, millions of years ago, all these structures that you're seeing in the universe that could have been us that got out there, you know, way back millions of years ago, that these are actually our structures?
I basically agree with that. I think what we're looking at is human stuff, very old, that our history is so much more amazing and so much more ancient than any of the mainstream academics have allowed us to believe. And I think, again, the hard evidence will come when we get either close-up imagery of the ruins, so there's no doubt they're ruins, or we find the libraries. I mean, one of the things I'm working on now is the reasons why John Kennedy really sent us suddenly to the moon. And I believe that in the new work that I'm working on, which will be published later this year with Mike Barra, I think I will be able to substantiate to the level that everyone who's objective will be able to take a look at the evidence and say, that could be that the real reason for Apollo was to go to the moon to find technology, to find the libraries, to find evidence of exactly what you have just said. So I think that's a lot of interesting new evidence and new developments are going to be occurring on that front within the next year, George, you know, by and large, apart from what we're looking to confirm on Mars.
You know, when Ingo Swann remote viewed the moon and put a lot of that in his book, Penetration, he saw structures on
the
moon.
He saw stuff.
Now, and he kind of thought they were alien, but after talking with Jonathan Gray and listening to people like you over the years, Richard, I may be convinced that we're not talking about extraterrestrial work there, but we're talking about work from ancient human civilizations that had the technology and got us there.
Which, of course, George, would then make the cover-up totally make sense.
Yes.
I mean, if you're in a universe where you have very short-sighted religious fanatics on all sides, basically try to control everybody else because their view of the universe is that it was created 6,000 years ago, and you actually know there's evidence that human beings were alive in this solar system millions of years ago and living at an incredible level of technology on multiple planets and satellites all over the solar system. I mean, how would that put the so-called fall, which is given to us by certain very important historic and sacred books, how would that put that into a new perspective? Was it, in fact, a fall from a time when man was at the level almost of the angels and, in fact, ultimately retreated to this one little place where we now routinely, at the drop of anything, make up better ways to kill each other rather than figure out how extraordinary we all are and how related we all are to each other as brothers and sisters?
Well, I'm going to put up a chalkboard in my office in Los Angeles. It's going to say, Richard Hoagland, scientists, two columns, and every time mainstream scientists or NASA scientists say, this is bizarre, this is perplexing, I'm going to give you 1 point. Let's go to our first-time caller line. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hi. Good evening, gentlemen. My name is Doug. I like to say I'm a little nervous. Excuse me. I listen to you all the time, George, and I'm a big fan.
Thank you,
Richard,
Doug.
I'd like to ask, as far as the shapes and what, and hopefully this question isn't too vague or rounded. What is the significance of these shapes and on the planets that they're around, or in essentially what would you say orbiting, or do they have any would they have any actual physical effects on the planets?
Well, all right. The significance of the shapes is they're like signatures. All right. Energy comes in certain forms and modalities when it flows between higher and lower points. And you can see those signatures on Earth. For instance, you have liquids, solids, and gases. Those are signatures of energy flowing from one place to another, things getting warmer, things getting cooler, and the phase state change of materials like water, you know, water vapor, snow, or ice, indicates how much energy is present or is flowing in any particular state. Well, when you look at other planets, you're looking at other materials, not water or water ice necessarily, and it's almost like a dye. The geometries, the signatures we're seeing, are a wave pattern indicative of how the energy is flowing. Now, the key thing is that when you measure the energy coming out of these planets, much more is coming out than is coming in from the sun. And there isn't a huge amount of radioactive stuff buried in the planet. That's been dismissed over the years. They're not shrinking. That was one theory that was, you know, kind of in vogue for a while. That turns out not to be the case. It's really a mysterious energy. Well, if that energy is, in fact, coming up from the center, from the core, it has to be appearing there. It has to be transmitted there from somewhere. But it's not going through space. It's not going through the three dimensions that we can see, that we can experience, that we can observe with instruments, with spacecraft. So how is it appearing? Well, it's appearing in our model literally out of hyperspace. It's appearing out of another dimension. And these planets out there are not the only ones where it's appearing. It's appearing in the Earth. Ultimately, I believe that the global warming that we're experiencing now, where every scientist that, you know, Alan and George and the others have now talked to, basically agree that there's global warming. They can't agree on the cause. There's the, you know, the Gore types that say it's SUVs. And then there's the other scientists who say, oh, no, it's a natural cycle with the sun. Well, unfortunately, the sun has actually been getting a little dimmer in this period, even when the Earth and the other planets are getting warmer. So where does that take us? It takes us to the idea that energy is appearing from hyperspace inside planets, inside their cores, their mantles, their atmospheres, warming them up, being dissipated by entropic degradation into heat. But in fact, we don't know. Mainstream science can't track where it's coming from. That's why this incredible signature on Saturn, predicted by the geometry of rotating mass and the hyperdimensional geometric mathematical projections of a lot of very mainstream mathematicians several decades ago, comes into its own, because it's the only answer, ultimately, from where this excess energy is coming from. I mean, we've got Pluto, which is 4+ billion miles from the center of the solar system, leaving it, going farther away from the sun, getting warmer, not colder. I mean, that should tell any fifth grader, you know, that the Fox television show, Are You Smarter Than a Fifth Grader? Should tell any fifth grader that still thinks that Pluto is a planet, which it is, that in fact the energy is coming from hyperspace and is appearing inside Pluto and its atmosphere. It's not coming from the sun. And if NASA ever gets its mind around that, if mainstream physics can ever encompass that, the implications are stunning, because we can create on Earth a technology, a portable technology that can put a generator for electricity or heating in the winter in every home in America and on the planet for relative pennies if we understand the physics of planets that duct energy from hyperspace into three dimensions.
Richard, which is probably what the inhabitants of Nibiru did as they are on this 3,600-year elliptical orbit, and they don't get very close to the sun most of the time.
If that was true, and that's a whole other discussion, George, yeah,
exactly.
That's the only way that they could exist is if they had tapped into this hyperspatial source
Absolutely.
Of energy.
Absolutely. And the more I hear you talk about it, if that is true, that theory of Zachariah Sitchin and his interpretation of those Sumerian tests, it's the only way I think they can exist.
Well, I happen to know from Gene Mailoff of a technology that exists here and now that actually is working. It's not voodoo science. It's not, you know, bad science. It's real science. But it has been politically and economically suppressed because of people like the oil company. Very short-sighted people who think that they are going to charge us through our teeth forever for using this incredible polluting and very bad. I mean, even if SUVs don't cause global warming, George, which they don't, we still should not drive them using internal combustion engines because they're bad for our health.
I agree. Here's that phone number again for Richard C. Hoagland's UN briefing. It's 1-877-345-6222. And Richard, can they get info on the enterprisemission.com website as well?
They sure can, and by tomorrow I should have the full piece up there on what this is trying to tell us in an extraordinary new way.
Remarkable hour. Thanks, Richard.
Thanks, George.
Vindicated again, my friend. We'll be back in a moment as we talk about demons on Coast to Coast AM.